plastic people with plastic minds are on their way to plastic homes. What? Okay, hey Joe Scott Heron, nice to hear from you. This is Eric Mann with my co-host Manuel Criollo, and we're on with Dorothy Roberts. Dorothy, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. I love the interview you did in Ms. Magazine. We're going to be talking about reproductive rights. We're going to be talking about the move by the Senate Republicans have appointed two of Congress's most outspoken anti-abortion members to the Senate. We're going to talk about the Democrats' courageous response by trying to appoint two anti-abortion people to the Senate Majority Leader and now the head of the Democratic National Convention. So you can see the real courage of the Democratic Party in terms of defending women's rights. But I think that the core, which I want to do throughout your work, Dorothy, is your efforts to try to break the classical debate about, quote, women's rights and women's reproductive rights to make the centrality of oppressed nationality women and black women as not simply a different issue, but a totally different perspective, a lens through which to understand the debate about reproductive rights. Do you maybe want to start there and we can go from the general back into the particulars?
Oh, okay, sure. I think that women of color in the United States and actually globally have always focused on a broader view of reproductive freedom and justice that centers more on social justice and human rights rather than just on the right against government interference in abortion. And so that includes the right to have children as well as to decide whether to terminate a pregnancy. But I think most importantly it links the reproductive decisions to broader social justice issues. It recognizes that women do not have true freedom to make reproductive decisions unless there are also equitable social conditions. And so many of the struggles of women of color have been against coercive birth control policies just as much as policies that put barriers to the right to abortion. Although I think we focused more on issues like the right to be able to have access to abortion services, including public funding for abortion, than the mainstream reproductive rights movement has focused on. So the right to abortion is important, but we recognize that it has to be in tandem with an end to unjust social conditions that are what really interfere with women's reproductive decision-making and health. And also recognizing that there are government policies supported by market forces and sometimes private individuals' attempts to interfere with the ability to have healthy children, and that those are connected to racist ideologies as well. So, you know, most of the policies that have tried to deter women from having children are supported by a racist notion about reproduction, population control ideology, that there's certain groups that don't deserve to have children and whose reproduction is seen as causing social problems. And they end up being blamed for social problems that are really the result of power inequities. So all of these kinds of social issues, that the understanding that reproduction is linked to social equality and inequality, to political power struggles, are what's been at the heart of women of color struggles for reproductive justice.
Well,
and that's a very different picture from, you know, what most Americans think about what reproductive freedom means, which I think, you know, most think it means the legal right to abortion, which doesn't even carry with it the right to access to abortion services.
Well, I mean, let me try to do a little stream of consciousness in support of your your perspective. I mean, there was during the election, there was, and I am sorry, I think it was from the Black Commentator, and there were two groups that had done work on Black women's AIDS, writing a understated but serious criticism of John Edwards for totally dropping the ball when he was asked him the question.
Right.
They asked him the question, a very simple question. Are you aware of the fact that Black women are something like 5 times more than white women and one of the growing largest group of people to get AIDS in the United
right.
States? So Edwards, cracker that he is, says, well, let me get back to that question on Iraq that I didn't have enough minutes to talk about. And then when he finished, Cheney said, no, I didn't know that. And that was the whole conversation, right?
Right.
Like in terms of watching two white men so in deep pain over Black women having AIDS.
Yeah.
My wife, Leanne Hurst Mann, has just finished an article called Berkeley Oakland Women's Union and 30 Years of the Socialist Feminist Debate for a magazine that she publishes through our auspices of the Strategy Center called Our Order Now, in which she's trying to describe the grave dilemma of the white women's movement in the 70s, the left socialist feminist white women's movement, trying to grapple with the seemingly inexorable and unsolvable dilemma of white women's consciousness around Black women's and Puerto Rican women's reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
In the present, my question to you for all this is there a need for more independent organizing of Black women to take on the white women's establishment, given how much the white women's establishment seems to be willing to throw away Black women's reproductive rights?
Absolutely. I think that women of color who've been working in this area for decades, for a century, I mean, Black women in particular, but other women of color as well, have been struggling around these issues since emancipation, and have had dialogue with the predominantly white women's movement since the 1920s and 30s over, you know, issues of birth control. At one point I want to emphasize is that there has been organizing of women of color on this issue. It just
right.
hasn't gotten the attention it deserves. And there's been exchanges, including what you alluded to, with socialist white women in the 1970s. And, in fact, Black and Latina women did have a tremendous impact on white socialist women's understanding of reproductive freedom. Now, unfortunately, that impact didn't extend to the mainstream women's rights movement, but this has been an ongoing struggle. And in the 1970s and 80s, the way it was handled was largely groups like NARAL formed a women of color chapter, you know, or someone who handled women of color issues. And there's been a lot of really agonizing tension over these questions because, unfortunately, some leaders in the mainstream reproductive rights movement, which has been largely an abortion rights movement,
right.
see any mention of issues apart from that as somehow detracting from the importance of abortion. And so there have been a lot of arguments about this, and a lot of women of color have become frustrated, very frustrated, and so very recently there's been more of a turn to independent organizations run by women of color. For example, Sister Song, which is a coalition of reproductive and sexual rights organizations of women of color, and also a focus more on coalition building, not just with the women's rights movement or the mainstream reproductive rights movement, but with anti-racist and anti-poverty, the economic justice movements, making those kinds of connections as opposed to seeing this entirely as an issue of women's rights. So there's been a lot of strategizing over this issue of the best way to get the voices of women of color and their perspectives heard more prominently. And I think there's been very recently a lot more progress on this front. One example of that progress is the March for Women's Lives, which for the first time had women of color in leading position, organizing positions. And for the first time you heard from women of color in, you know, prominent speeches during the march. Now, unfortunately, the mainstream press didn't pick that up. So if you read the New York Times the next day, all you saw, you just saw quotes, you know, from people from Planned Parenthood at NARAL, et cetera, about abortion. And the reporting was almost entirely about abortion rights. But there were sizable numbers of women of color who participated in the march. And the name was changed from the March for Choice to the March for Women's Lives because of pressure from women of color.
Well, without giving direct advice, I think that the struggle has to be intensified, as we used to say, because one of the ways that things get co-opted is that, you know, many of the leaders of the women's abortion rights movement, NARAL, KARAL, and so forth, are so tight with the Democratic Party that they will drop their message in order to get Kerry elected. I mean, I was told by women from National Organization for Women that they were, this was on affirmative action in California, what was the Proposition 228?
209.
That Bill Clinton told them to just drop that proposition, you know, and not to fight on it.
Yeah.
Then the argument was, let's make white women the poster woman for affirmative action, because nobody likes black men.
Right.
That was how it was expressed, not my opinion.
Yeah.
Actually, you heard white women saying, the polls show that people don't like black men. I said, well, then let's bring slavery back then. What the hell? Let's bring lynching back if the polls show.
Yes.
I mean, let's do whatever the white folks want. I mean,
yes,
you know, so this insanity, this kind of insanity of the polls show. So I think that your work, the tone of two of your books are Killing the Black Body, Race, Reproduction, the Meaning of Liberty, is that right?
Yes.
Where would we get that book?
Well, it should be available in bookstores, you know, but I find that often when books sell out, if the publisher doesn't insist, they, you know, they may not restock it. But it's, you know, whichever online.
Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. It's on BarnesandNoble.com.
Good.
Yeah, in fact, I think on Amazon you can get a deal with my two books. I also have a book called Shattered Bonds, The Color of Child Welfare, which extends my work in reproduction to the child welfare.
So if people go on to Amazon and look at Dorothy Roberts, right, it'll bring up both of your books.
Right.
You hear that, folks? You hear that, folks?
Yeah, Killing the Black Body. And you know, if I can have time for me to pick up on what you just said, because I think it's such an important point. I've heard this argument over and over and over in the years I've been working on these issues, which is that, you know, that black women do not make sympathetic figures for political campaigns. And so, for example, I've done a lot of work on the punishment of black women for having children, either on grounds that they used drugs while pregnant, or they were on welfare while pregnant. But there are a number of policies that basically, I argue, punish black women because they had children. And these policies end up with decisions from the courts that are extremely dangerous, that threaten all women's reproductive health, like a decision in South Carolina that upheld a long-term conviction for a mother who tested positive for crack when she gave birth, and she was charged with abusing the fetus. Mm. And the court decision held that a fetus is a child for purposes of the child abuse statute. And so she was convicted of felony child abuse, and there was no evidence this baby was harmed at all. It was a perfectly healthy baby, but the risk that to the baby was held to be child abuse. Now, a decision that holds that a fetus is a child,
right?
You can see that that has tremendous implications for the right to abortion. It has huge, dangerous implications for the rights of all pregnant women, and very often the people. people in the women's movement will say, but, you know, a poor black crack addict is not very sympathetic, which is exactly why these decisions are so easily made, because nobody cares about them. But they end up with these very dangerous precedents. And the argument is, well, let's put forth the harm, the potential harm to white middle class women. Well, there may be that potential harm, but as we speak, there are thousands of poor black women whose babies are being taken away from them, who are being punished in various ways because of their reproductive decisions. And my position is we should take an anti-racist position, you know, say what this is, that this is racism that is helping to fuel. It's complicated. It's not, you know, there are also sexist reasons for this, also, you know, various reasons for it, but it's fueled by racism, as so many inequitable policies are. And I believe that unless you highlight the racism, you point out that that's what it is, and you base your opposition on an anti-racist position, you're just going to cover up what's going on, and you're not going to end these totalitarian types of policies that justify very brutal treatment of women, including locking up pregnant women in prison, shackling women while they're giving birth, all sorts of really brutal policies.
Dorothy, you're going to have to end it there. Check out my book, Eric Mann, Dispatches from Durban, first-hand commentaries on the World Conference Against Racism. It's also on Amazon.com. And Manuel, why don't you take us out of here? Dorothy, you great interview, and we'll be back and do some more with you.
Thank you. Thanks for your work.
Thanks for joining us this week. We would like to thank our guests, Peter Kornbluh and Dorothy Roberts. Today we had music from Pharrell Sanders, Victor Jara, Gil Scott-Heron, and Erlon Chavez. We would like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, and our engineer, Delphine Simonis. See y'all next week. Up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman.
Next Monday at 4. See you then.
You have been listening to the 4 o'clock report, Voices from the Frontline Edition on Listen to Support It, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and at kpfk.org across the globe. Stay tuned for Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman to discuss vital, local, and international issues coming up next.